Welcome to the PFN Miami Dolphins podcast. Once again, I'm your co-host, Dolph Freaky, here with Adam Beasley, who's coming off of the NFL owners meetings in Orlando. So he must be exhausted from the last couple of days. Adam, how are you?
Hey, I've always got energy to talk Dolphins football with you, Dolph Freaky.
There you go.
No, it was, I took the train. It was up in Orlando. They kind of rotate every year where these things are going to be held. It's one of the biggest events of the year, the owners meetings. Now, owners meet four times, I think, throughout the course of the year. They all get together and discuss things and vote on things. But this is really the big one. This is the one that the coaches go to. This is the one the GMs go to. So literally everybody who was important in the National Football League was all at the JW slash some other Marriott property that was attached to the Ritz-Carlton, I think, in Orlando. And I spent the last 3 days stalking people and talking to them about the Miami Dolphins.
That's exciting. So, I mean, you have a unique perspective. You know, I have never been to something like that, but you were like right there, you know, hearing all the action. And obviously we had a lot of news coming out about rule changes and different things like that, you know, pertaining to player safety. So did you want to shed any light on some of the things that we heard at the meetings?
Yeah, there's a lot that's changed. Certainly the kickoff, modification of the kickoff is topic number one. It's going to take some getting used to for sure. It took me about three times reading it and twice watching it for me to understand.
Yeah, me too. And I love the XFL. Like I do watch the XFL, but even
XFL?
You gotta kind of, yeah, you know, when they had the Vipers team, you know, that very first year, I kind of got into it a little bit. Not so much this past year, but.
You were an XFL fangirl, huh?
I was, yeah.
Wow.
I was Vipers freaky for a little while.
Well, I have never been and barely watched XFL. So my only exposure to their kickoffs was what I've seen on YouTube. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be fun, man. I mean, the stats were outrageous, I think. 13 of the kickoffs were touchbacks in the Super Bowl. 12 didn't even touch the ground, the field of play. The kickoff has become just a completely irrelevant play. Mm-hmm. And credit to two of the brightest special teams minds in the league, including Darren Rizzi, who was here for years and years and years, the Dolphins special teams coach. He's with the Saints now.
Yeah.
He and John Fossil, who is the special teams coach for the Cowboys, son of Jim Fossil, pretty well-known late NFL coach. The two of them got their heads together with other coaches throughout the league, and they've had this modified plan that they came up with, which is pretty intriguing, to be honest. I mean, they've got a format now where basically the ball's got to land between the goal line and the 20, and you won't get a 35-yard running head start as the kickoff coverage team, but you'll be setting up at the 40, so it's going to look like weird, like you're 25 yards off.
Yeah.
Offside. It's really, really going to be weird. But I do think the end result will be more kickoff returns, more action. Look, Devin Hester's going into the Hall of Fame. He wouldn't be a Hall of Famer in this era simply because he wouldn't get the opportunities. There's no more kickoff returns. So this is going to be, I think, a step in the right direction. But it's going to take some getting used to at first.
Yeah, I agree. So we should be able to see some more action on the field, you know, and hopefully less injuries, which is oftentimes the goal with a lot of these meetings and alterations that are made. So speaking of that as well, you know, the banning of the hip drop tackle was also a huge thing. And that was another thing that a lot of people have been trying to kind of wrap their heads around as well. You know, what exactly is the definition of the hip drop tackle? And so I've been watching, you know, plays and, you know, tape and, you know, a lot of people have, you know, been circulating a clip of Tyreek last year. And so what are like the three main components to this hip drop tackle as defined by the NFL?
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, when you see it. So it's another one of those things where it's visual, but it's lift, twist, and then kind of slam into their legs. Mm-hmm. And I think Tyreek almost got seriously hurt last year by a sideline hip drop tackle. I think that was the cause of the injury he had. Fortunately, it wasn't a season ender like some of these guys have, but he missed time because of it. I would suggest you go and look for it, because it's harder to explain than it is to show.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's taking a violent act out of the game. Now, defensive mm-hmm. players, Javon Holland weighed in. Defensive players think, hey, this is flag football. We're taking all the physicality out of the game. They had some same complaints when they said they couldn't land with all their body weight on a quarterback, when they said that they couldn't hit to the head, when they said they couldn't do a horse collar tackle, all these all these changes of the league certainly haven't helped defenses, but defenses have adapted, and I would assume they will as well. I mean, how many egregious hip drop tackles do you see in the course of the year? Maybe a couple of dozen over the course of the entire National Football League. So if they're able to legislate those plays out, I think it's a plus.
Yeah, I agree. So 15-yard penalty will be utilized when that is called. So that should make things a little bit more interesting as well. So it's good, you know, from a fan standpoint, obviously we want to see our players, you know, continue to be, you know, safe and healthy and that sort of thing. Unfortunately, I do understand the complication that this causes for defenses, especially like ours, when they play lights out, you know, it's, you're not necessarily always aware of, you know, what you're doing in that moment. So it's interesting to see how that'll have an effect, especially like going into the playoffs.
It's a skill. Like anything else, if you practice it, you're going to get better at it. So, you're going to see, it's going to be what the league does when they have these rule changes or these rule emphases. They really, really go after it in training camp. And most specifically the preseason, like you'll see a ton of flags, I think, thrown in the preseason, so, more than you should early in the season. And then equilibrium kind of settles in and they figure it out. Mm-hmm. So, those were the two big takeaways. A couple other things that with the owners meetings that fans might care about. Christmas Day is a Wednesday this year. There will be two Christmas Day games. Now, fingers crossed, I'm hoping the Dolphins aren't one of them because I enjoy seeing my family.
Yeah.
But there will be four teams that play, and it's crazy because like we had Wednesday game, I think once during COVID, right? Mm-hmm. Because all the schedule got screwed up. There's going to be now on the schedule for the first time ever, Wednesday games. And it'll only be when Christmas is on a Wednesday. So with leap year, what is it? Once every 5 or 6 years, whatever it is. It happens to be this year. So here's what's kind of weird is, okay, so that game falls week 16, I believe. Mm-hmm. So week 14, either the team will either have to be on a bye or play Sunday, or I guess Thursday, presumably, but they're not going to play Monday because they're going to go from Sunday to the next Saturday. All four teams that play on Christmas Day will play Sunday, then Saturday on week 15, and then Wednesday in week 16. So it's going to be three games in 11 days, which isn't great. But I guess on the flip side is if you're one of those teams and you survive that gauntlet, then you have basically a second bye.
Yeah.
You have from Wednesday until the following Sunday to get healthy. And so like if you have 10, 11 days rest going into a huge week 17 game down the stretch, that could be helpful too. So I guess there's two ways to look at it, but the NFL has seen just absolutely fantastic numbers with their Christmas Day games. I think they got 29 million plus for the first two games last year. What was it? Raiders and Chiefs, I think. And then maybe it was a Giants and Eagles were the two games that got really big numbers. That the nighttime game didn't do quite as well, but it was still over 25 million viewers. So they still had a pretty good audience. There's going to be two this year. They're both going to be in the afternoon. And we'll find out probably when's the schedule come out in a few weeks, not very long from now, when the games will be.
Yeah, I know. For me, I love watching football with my family. The holidays are not the same if there's not football on. So obviously, yeah, I don't want the Dolphins to play on Christmas Day either because it creates a challenge for my little kids. And I've had to lie in the past couple, you know, the past 2 years we had Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and I've had to lie about the exact day that Santa was coming. So luckily they're young enough that I can get away with it for now. But yeah, no, it's great. I didn't even consider, you know, the effect of the teams, you know, having a short week. So it's very interesting. I don't envy at all the schedule makers responsibility here, but
thankfully they've got AI now.
I mean, really everything's helped. AI. That was one of the cool things that I learned during my fan of the year process. We got to do Zooms with the scheduler. And he's like, we have these computers running, you know, all the time. They're always coming up with scenarios and we take them, we, you know, say, oh, this one's not going to work. This one does work. Maybe let's put this one to the side and see what happens. And so it's such a process. I don't even think most fans have an appreciation for everything that goes into that.
You go back and read old Peter King Sports Illustrated stories because he was always the schedule guy. And they had literally a massive board with little like icons that they place, you know, and you know, you got to hope that the cleaning service doesn't come and, you know, knock it over at night or months of hard work are down the drain. But no, it's gotten a lot better, but it's gotten a lot harder too, because now you have, I mean, look, you've got games. I think that Christmas week you'll have Thursday, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday. No, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So 8 days of games in like 10, 11 days. It's going to be nothing but National Football League.
Wild.
Over the holidays, which is great because people are home and they want to watch TV.
Yeah. And of course, with the, you know, at that point in the season, we have a lot of playoff implications. So it gets really interesting.
You want to talk Dolphins football?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. So we had, it was a busy week. We heard for the first time since free agency from Mike McDaniel. He was part of the all 32 coaches, not owners, all 32 coaches.
Finally, we've been missing him.
Yeah. He's been under the radar a bit. We got a chance to ask him about all the new players, all their decisions they've made. It's been a really, really impactful, significant offseason for this team. We know the players that are gone: Christian Wilkins, Robert Hunt, Andrew Van Ginkle, Xavien Howard, Jerome Baker. Really, really a transitional and transformational offseason for the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. We can't spend the remaining time we have going over everything he said, but there were like seven big takeaways, I think, from that half an hour briefing that we got with him. And so you want to run through those?
Sure. Yeah. So he definitely had some commentary as far as, you know, Tua, whether he thought that Tua, whether people think, you know, that Tua would hold out, and coach was pretty adamant that he feels like, you know, with it, Tua's character, his drive, you know, his willingness to, you know, prove what he has to prove, that he would not be holding out.
Yeah, and that's my guess, is there's been some back channel communication or maybe front facing communication, just Mike to Tua, hey, where do things stand? How are you doing with this process? I think Tua understands that these quarterback contract extensions usually happen in the summertime. Mm-hmm. Look, last year, and it was May, June, July, August when all these big deals got done. Because they're tough to do. Like, it's your quarterback extension long-term deal is the most important contract of an entire team, not just because you're committing yourself to a player who you think can help you win a Super Bowl, but you've got to make sure the structure is in a way that you're able to still build a roster around them in a year in, year out basis. And what seasons are they going to have more cap space? And so maybe Tua's contract is heavier on that year than in others. Certainly they're not going to load up his cap charge this year. It's already $23 million. My guess is they want to lower that, not raise it. But he's going to get $50 million plus, presumably, from the Dolphins. Now, the big question is guaranteed money. How much of that is going to be guaranteed? Usually it's 2.5-3 years. You're going to guarantee him $125, $150 million. That might be a bit tough for a guy who, 14 months ago wasn't sure he wanted to continue to play football because of his injury history. So I think that there is a good relationship. The best part about all this, if you're a Dolphins fan, is Tua and Mike they're really tight. They're really, really, really tight. So it's not surprising that Tua wouldn't hold out. It's crazy, Allie. We're 19 days away from Dolphins activities.
Yeah.
Like the off season program begins in 19 days. And then when that starts, you go the whole way through mid-June, and then there's a month off and it's training camp. Yeah. So we're really starting to get to the point now where what we've been talking about for the last month that you've been nice enough to join us on the show has been what might be. In a couple of weeks, it'll be what will be. And I don't think Tua has, knowing the competitive drive he has, knowing how football is, as Mike said, it's family and football, and that's the entirety of faith, obviously, are the three big pillars of Tua Tagovailoa. And I don't think he's going to walk away from one of those because the contract negotiations aren't going the way he likes.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's going to be nice to not have to speculate for a while and be able to talk about what's actually happening. So I look forward to that. You know, sometimes we watch these podcasts and it's just like, one opinion after the next. So, it's good to know.
This one has the right opinions, though. This is this podcast.
You have the right opinions. We're not biased or anything. So Coach also had talked a little bit about the salary cap. And obviously, you know, if we think that our heads are spinning as fans, think about this poor man and, you know, having to know that he lost Christian Wilkins, but he understands the financial aspect and the business aspect. So do you want to go into that a little bit?
Yeah, no, it was basically, and I wrote about this today in PFN, They could have kept those two players, Wilkins and Hunt, or they could have filled the 15 needs they had on the team. Like, they couldn't do both. Like, it was, they only had a finite amount of resources. And the quote that he had, which was pretty fun. Sometimes we can't be the kids spending the money. We have to be the parents that have to look at our budget and make sure we can pay the water bill.
Yeah.
And, you know, signing, you know, Jordan Brooks, paying the water bill, you know, signing, Jonnu Smith, paying the water bill. They had holes, signing Jordan Poyer, paying the water bill. These guys aren't huge, splashy, certainly Poyer at this stage of his career, Shaq Barrett, they're not, you know, wow players, and they didn't get paid like wow players, but they're very important players to a team that needs a 53-man roster, right? Like, we can't, the Dolphins for too long had gotten this mindset where we're going to be players at the highest end of the pay scale. Mm-hmm. Trade for Tyreek, trade for Bradley Chubb, trade for Jalen Ramsey, right? Pay all these guys big money. Well, even with the salary cap going up 13% this year, Allie, it's still a finite amount of money. And so that was kind of the point, is like, hey, this is like us losing Wilkins, us losing Hunt were the ramifications of all the decisions that we made. Now, you could argue that even if they could afford to pay those guys, would it have been smart to pay Christian Wilkins $27.5 million? Would it have been smart to pay Robert Hunt $20 million a year? I mean, that's, I think those are bad contracts.
And you can't pay the water bill.
Right, you cannot pay the water bill. And Wilkins is now the number two highest paid defensive tackle, and Hunt is the number three paid offensive guard in the league. Those are fine players. Are they two of the top three players each at their respective positions in the entire National Football League? Probably not. And so I do think the Dolphins were wise in spreading the love around, but it is hard saying goodbye to some fan favorites. I totally get that.
Yeah, and he definitely made it clear, you know, that it wasn't that they never doubted Christian as a player, that this was, you know, strictly, you know, what, when you're looking at the entire scope of the team, these are the decisions that need to be made.
Yep. A lot has changed in the last couple of months. One thing that's not going to change going forward, Mike McDaniel is not surrendering play calling. I know that was a storyline, and even I kind of fed into it a little bit when the season ended because of just how bad the offense looked over the last month. But I, you know, think some time, some perspective has set in. That still was a no doubt top five offense in almost every single statistical category. Yeah, they got to figure out how things go down the stretch. Tua's got to play better late. They got to be a more diverse offense. They got to be able to run the ball better than they did, and more with more consistency than they did. But come on, Mike McDaniel, he is the head coach of the Miami Dolphins because of his offensive acumen. And if you take away his play calling, you take away a big chunk of the value he brings to the team. So his quote was, I mean, some of these coaches get a little salty when you ask them, hey, you're going to give up play calling? Yeah. I mean, such a big part of their identity. But he, you know, he's taken it in stride, and he acknowledged, quote, I've thought about it long and hard.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't, you know, I take the guy at his word. It wasn't just lip service that they, you know, they looked at every possible way to improve the franchise. And if having Frank Smith call plays instead of Mike McDaniel was the best way to have them get to a Super Bowl, Mike would have strongly considered it. I don't think he believes that there's a benefit, that the drawbacks of him not calling plays, he believes they're outweighed by the benefits of him giving it up. So he will be on the headset again in 2024, and we'll see if it's better down the stretch.
Fantastic. Yeah. That's the takeaway that I took too. Like, he's acknowledging that he knows he might have, you know, an underlying flaw, or, you know, he's heard, you know, people, you know, calling out, he's aware, but he's taking it in stride and acknowledging that it's something that they've looked at and they're working on, and, you know, good. You know, he even said we'll adjust as necessary. So that's great to hear. A big storyline this week, Odell Beckham Jr. came to visit the Dolphins, left without a contract. You know, there's a lot of speculation about why, you know, and we did find out this week that an offer was made. And obviously, you know, business takes time. So what are your thoughts on where those negotiations are going?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that the Dolphins have a valuation for Odell Beckham. Odell Beckham has a valuation for himself, and those numbers are different. The question is, are you able to bridge that divide, right? Are they close enough that after he does his free agency tour, my guess, he's going to visit other teams. He's going to clearly talk to other teams, see about what's out there. Can those numbers come close enough together that Odell is comfortable signing that contract? I mean, we just spent the last 10 minutes talking about how the salary cap is real. They have finite resources. Paying $12 million to a number three wide receiver who might give you, I don't know, 400 snaps a year and 40 catches, that's not great business. If Odell can get that elsewhere and that payday is his number one priority, God bless him. I mean, that's, you know, that's the right of every NFL player, certainly. And I would never begrudge any player for doing what's best for him and his family. But if, you know, he's made a lot of money in his career, and assuming he was smart with his, you know, his investments, he shouldn't have to worry about his next payday. So if the Dolphins are relatively close to the next best offer and they live in a state with no state income tax and they're playing for Mike McDaniel, who has shown that he can get the best out of offensive players, I mean, Tyreek Hill, people want to give Tyreek Hill all the credit for this offense, and certainly he's a very, very important player. He's had his two best NFL seasons playing with Mike McDaniel and Tua Tagovailoa. I don't think that's by accident, and I think other players around the league have acknowledged and realized that and want to come here and play for them. If all things being equal, the Dolphins should be Odell's destination, but if there's a team that comes in and just blows him away financially, the Dolphins aren't going to match that.
Yeah, I mean, at least I think we're in a position where we don't need him. You know, I think a lot of fans are happy to have him, but at least it's a position where we don't need him and we don't need to overpay.
Yeah, and they do need a number three wide receiver, but here's what's working against Odell. And that's why I think it might be until after the draft that this contract gets done with whoever he signs with. It's a really good draft for wide receivers. And so the Dolphins can find a younger, cheaper, higher upside at this point wide receiver in the draft, they're going to probably do that. Doesn't necessarily have to be the first round. I think they go offensive line first round, but they do have a second round pick. And if they move up a little bit and get one of these guys that slips, it's probably the better organizational move than throwing more big money at an aging veteran. So I think it was a good start, right? Like any relationship needs a beginning. And I think that was the beginning of a potential relationship with the Dolphins. But my guess is it's going to be a minute before he decides on where he lands.
So going back to, you know, some of our guys, I know Coach had a lot to say about our injured players, you know, Bradley Chubb, Jalen Phillips, you know, obviously they're in the process of rehabbing from their injuries. He did speak a lot about those two and, you know, the perception of like, are we hurrying up to get these guys ready, you know, for week one, or, you know, what is their outlook? What's the story?
Yeah, so a couple of things. I think you need to see them not as the same rehab. I think they're two totally different cases. Jalen Phillips, his injury was before Bradley Chubb's. While traditionally it's a more serious injury, Achilles is more serious than ACL. The extra month he had, the fact that he's 24 years old, the fact that he's a damn Adonis, right? I mean, that guy is just chiseled. I mean, he is in as great shape as you'll find any person, let alone, you know, professional, you know, football player. I think that all works in his favor. My guess is, just reading between the lines, the Dolphins feel more optimistic about him being ready week one than Bradley Chubb. But here's the thing. Both those guys are absolutely crushing it. Like they're in there. They live there. Like they joke that I think it was true that they put tape down for where their little scooters were supposed to park as parking spots. I think the Dolphins are concerned about overdoing it.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, we are still 6 months away from the start of the regular season, right? In Chubb's case, he got hurt, what was it, New Year's Eve? Mm-hmm. So we're not even 3 months removed from his ACL.
Right.
So the idea that he's going to participate in OTAs, not going to happen. The idea that he's going to be ready for the start of training camp, highly unlikely. Because even still then, you're just 7 months removed. So I think if you're a betting man, Phillips actually has, even though he has a more significant injury, has the better chance of being ready for the opener. But regardless, they've both been absolutely crushing it, been in that building basically nonstop. And the Dolphins had to kick them out, right? They had to tell them both, go take a week away, get out of here. What was the quote? We need to make sure we aren't chasing a timeline, because as competitors, they will achieve that timeline. And it might be at the worst of their bodies. And the point is this, is like, you can go too hard now and suffer a setback or do something that gets you off your schedule or just doesn't help you. And so that's the thing, is that they don't want to get healthy for 1 week. They want to get healthy for the whole season. And I think the Dolphins, particularly under McDaniel, have been really smart to have that long-term perspective, which is why I think they're going to still be very, very cautious with, I mean, those two guys are hugely important. Like if the Dolphins are going to make a run this year, they need their pass rush. And the pass rush is Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb. You know, we'll see what Shaq Barrett can offer. Maybe they get somebody in the draft. Maybe they sign somebody late in free agency. But those two are your two core pass rushers, along with obviously Zach Sealer. They need them a lot more in November and December than they need them in August and September.
Yeah, I agree. I like the mentality that the Dolphins have about this, you know, looking at, you know, we're not just getting ready for 1 week, we're getting ready for the whole season. And we look forward to having those guys back with us soon, but not too soon.
Yeah. Something else that really stood out to me is that I think we might see a new version of the McDaniel offense. Certainly every year they have new wrinkles. Last year it was Tyreek lining up basically as tight end, sprinting out wide in motion and then using his momentum as the ball snapped to turn up field. That was really, really cool. Usually motion is across the entire formation here. It was basically just halfway. Teams finally, you know, ultimately caught on to that. Yeah. So the Dolphins always need to know what the next generation of what their offense is going to be. I do think that it was telling what McDaniel said. You know, they're going to adapt completely to their personnel. And it's not just, okay, this is the McDaniel offense, and we're going to make round pegs fit into square holes. No, they're going to use the talent that they're able to get. And they don't know what their roster is going to fully look like yet. I know they probably know of the 53 dudes that are on their opening day roster, they probably now know 40 to 45 of them. But there's still a lot of unknowns, and there's still pieces that they can add. And so this is the quote that kind of stuck out to me. It's not about magnets or depth charts. It's about human beings and who's the best player. So as long as we have very capable football players at every position, you're trying to position yourself where, quote, okay, who's the best player at what they do, and let's evolve around them. How I talk about skill position players in general at the stage we're at with our roster, that's the kind of approach that we'll look for. Who's the best player, and we'll adjust by position. So if they stumble across another high-end tight end in the draft, they're going to be a two tight end offense, and they're going to rotate their top three guys and play those guys. And then you're not going to maybe need a number three receiver as much as you did, and vice versa. If they go out and sign Odell today, they're not going to need to worry about getting targets out of their tight end. So I think that's a credit to McDaniel that he's not static. He's not calcified. I mean, certainly he's a young guy. He shouldn't be stubborn, but coaches are heavy goes. Coaches believe that they're – a lot of coaches believe that they're smarter than everybody else and their way is the best way, and the players just aren't getting it done. I've never really gotten that sense from McDaniel, and certainly what he said on Monday reinforced that he's open to new wrinkles or wholesale changes to an offense that's had significant success over the last couple of years.
So the seriousness which coach is speaking, you know, about everything that we've discussed – you know, a lot of people were kind of saying, oh, this is a throwaway year. Like, there's no way we're going to have the success that we had in, you know, 2023. You know, we should just start planning for, you know, 2025 season. I believe, you know, the coach had been asked about, you know, whether he saw this as a bridge year. Mm-hmm. And he was pretty adamant that this is not a bridge year. We're not taking this, you know, this season any less serious than any other.
Yeah. And again, you expect your coach to say that, but I kind of believe him too.
Yeah, I know.
Because like they have made aggressive moves to fortify real needs. And I think that Steve Ross is 85 years old or whatever it is now. Guy's not going to have a throwaway year. He's just not. Now, you know, more things might need to go right for them than in years past. I think we talked about that last week. They're making some gambles, and not all those gambles are going to pay off, certainly. Like you sign a bunch of aging injury history players. Don't be surprised if they get really old or they get hurt. You know, so I think that there's a lot of things that need to go right. But the point he made, which I think is good, is this. And here's the quote. I think everybody's individual expectations are extremely high. The more people lower their expectations, it's kind of erroneous or irrelevant. But I know that starting on April 15th, and by the way, that's when the offseason program begins, starting on April 15th, guys are very, very hungry to deliver on what they know, which is an opportunity to be on a team that has the ability to grow from what we've learned last year and what we went through, and have zero thought as to down, rebuilding, whatever those words are, years. That makes zero sense to me. Fans are going to pay. Yeah, this is another good point. You and the other tens of thousands of fans that show up to these games are going to pay to try us, watch us play football, and people don't go into games to watch people lose. And this is another important point. People's careers, this will likely be the most important year for every single player because it's the only one that exists. And there's nothing's guaranteed. This could be the last season for any of these guys that step on the field. They're not going to just mail it in. And again, that's why coaches and players don't tank. Organizations do. Like, every coach wants to win as much as he can. Every player wants to make as much money and win as much as he can. Sometimes they're just dealt a bad deck, dealt a bad hand because the GM is trying to reset. I don't see this here. I see them as taking a new direction. Certainly there's, again, limitations because of the cap, but this is not, if this team goes 7-10, 6-11, something went desperately wrong in 2024.
I just get goosebumps, like, especially from that quote from Coach McDaniel. The way that he speaks, doesn't that give you goosebumps when you see him speaking live? Like, oh my goodness. Like, I know, you know, obviously we love Coach, but look how bright he is and how what a speaker he is. And he can tell you to shut up in like 10 different ways. And yeah, it just hits the point hard that, yeah, definitely. What really got with me is that the fans are not going to go to the games to watch us lose. At one point, I was the stop tanking girl with my stop tanking, you know, stop sign. And I never want to have to go through that again. So I'm very confident that that is not going to be the case anytime soon with Mike McDaniel.
Yeah. And the big important piece is that they believe they have their quarterback. Yeah. And it's, you really never truly tank if you have what you believe is a franchise quarterback. You might have years that, you know, there's a hard ceiling, and this might be one of those years. Like, if they get to the, if they win a playoff game and get to a divisional round with the reset that they have, I'd say it's a pretty successful season. Now, if they bottom out though, when they're bad, I think there's going to be some
knock on wood.
Yeah. Well, from a, you know, from a beat standpoint, I've covered too many of those teams. I don't need to cover another one. I'm in a new era of Dolphins football. Four straight winning seasons, two straight playoff appearances. Happy to keep that that momentum going because it makes my job a lot easier.
Absolutely awesome. Guys, going forward, you know, please make sure you like, subscribe to the channel so you can never miss any news from Beasley and I. We continue to do this podcast once a week. And if you guys need anything, you know, any information pertaining to the draft, I know we have the top 100 draft prospects up there on profootballnetwork.com. Check that out. And always, please keep following us on social media. We'll keep you informed.
Yep. Next week, we are definitely turning the page to the draft. So start reading those profiles. All right, Doll Freaky?
Yeah. Oh, I've been.
Talk to you next week.
Take care, guys. Fins up.